Page 510, we're going to start Pasuk Tezvav, Pasuk 15. Chapter 34, Pasuk 15. The last thing we're learning, that Hashem made a covenant with Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jews, and Hashem says, I'm driving away the six nations of Canaan. We learned that the seventh nation, Girgashi, they didn't have to drive away because they ran away on their own. Hashem says, don't make a covenant with the nations of the earth, and that's what we're up to now. Okay? And Hashem says in Pasuk Tezvav, in Pasuk 14, Yudalit, we learned not to bow down to any other gods. And what we discussed last week was the Resh and the Dalit, the difference between why the Resh is a bad letter, so to speak, and the Dalit is a good letter, and so on. Now it says like this, Pentichres Bris Liyeshiv Ha'aretz, lest you will make a covenant with the nations of the earth, with the nations of the land, meaning the land of Canaan, v'zanu v'achrei alokehem, and you'll stray after their gods, v'zavchul alokehem, you will slaughter animals to their gods, meaning you bring sacrifice, v'kod alokha, and they will invite you, v'achalta mizivcha, and you'll eat from their sacrifices. So Hashem is telling the Jewish people that you cannot make any covenant whatsoever, that you can't even go to the party. And by the way, this doesn't apply today, but in the days of idol worshipping, there was a din that if a non-Jew made a party on the day of his holidays, where they used to worship idols, it was forbidden for a Jew to attend the party. Not only that, it doesn't apply today, but it says in Halacha, you can't do business with them 3 days before the party and 3 days after the party. You're not allowed to do business with them. This is all, as the Torah said, because they didn't want the Jews to start following in the ways of the non-Jews. And therefore it was forbidden. Okay, so the Torah says like this. What will come from this? V'lakachtem mibneisav levanecha. You'll end up taking their daughters for your sons, meaning they'll marry non-Jewish girls. V'zanu b'neisav, and the girls, meaning the daughters-in-law who are not Jewish, will make the sons turn achrei alokehem, after their gods. V'hizno as banecha, and they will turn away your children achrei alokehem, after their gods. So the Torah says, by making a covenant with them, becoming friendly with them, what you're actually going to do is become assimilated with the non-Jews. You're going to start mingling with them, go to their parties, start worshipping their idols, and so on. In fact, we find even by Shlomo HaMelech, the famous story when he married 1,000 wives, imagine 1,000 wives, and eventually the Pasuk says that they made him turn, because they're all officially non-Jewish, even though the Rambam said they all converted, they were all Jewish, but the end justified the means. At the end they went back to their idol worshipping, and the Pasuk says that they got Shlomo HaMelech to worship idols. But the Gemara says, and we learned that in the Gemara Shir, that God forbid to say that Shlomo HaMelech worshipped idols. What it means is that they wanted him to, but he didn't. But the Torah says the fact that they even tried to influence Shlomo HaMelech, and his level was called like he worshipped idols. So the Torah says basically you cannot become too friendly with them, and because then all this negativity comes out, and all the idol worshipping comes out, and so on and so forth. Then the pasuk continues, Elokei Masecha Lisatzalach. Don't make for yourself any molten gods, meaning gods made out of metal. And the Daskim Malatesis explained, what does this mean? Because the ego, the golden calf, was made out of gold. So he says you shouldn't have any of these molten gods that you're going to be making in any way whatsoever. Now, okay, that we said about anger. There's one more thing about Elokei Masecha. Okay, basically it's forbidden for a Jew even to make an image of a god, even if they're not planning to serve it. For instance, if a guy wants to go to business of selling idols, he's not allowed to do it. He can't have anything to do with it, even if he's doing it with no purpose in mind, just to make it. It's forbidden to do such a thing. And that's what the Torah says, L'kei Masecha. Last week we discussed at great length, but the Gemara says that this pasuk also refers to not getting angry. Remember? Yeah.
How about articles which are made of clay for decorative purposes for homes?
But they're idol-based?
No. just for decorative purposes.
Then it's not a problem. But sometimes you have certain engraved images, not pictures, but you have certain
statues
that have the full face of a person and the full bust of a person. It's questionable in halacha if you're allowed to have it. And halacha says you have to chip a part of it. They could chip a little bit on the nose, make the Jewish nose a little shorter, chip the nose a little bit, or something like that. No, but there is a question if somebody has an engraved image of animals or people or things like that. Because it says, we just read in Ten Commandments, you shouldn't make any engraved image of people or animals or things like that. Now, some people take it to the extreme. They don't even allow pictures. You know, and in Israel, you have those people that go like this, that you can't take their picture. That already, in our circles, most of the world is lenient. But to make an engraved image, so if it's anything that has to do with gods, with idol worshipping, you're allowed.
Rabbi, yeah. Selling statues in the business.
It's a very big question in halacha if you're allowed to do that. It is. You're talking about sculptures. It's not such an easy thing unless if there's a little bit imperfection there. The question is it forbidden also to sell or just to make, or is it forbidden to have? In Shulchan Aruch there's a lot of pages on it. A lot of pages. It goes into a lot of different details, whether the issue is to make it, to own it, to sell it, you know, all these things. It could be questionable. But sometimes, for instance, if somebody has a statue of Buddha, right, that's definitely exactly what the Torah is saying here, you're not allowed to have. Because that's mamish made as an idol. So any of these things that has any connection to any form of, you know, there's a whole question about yoga, there's a whole question about a lot of these Eastern types of things, if their origin is in Avodah Zarah or not. And I'll give you even another example. It was the LA, I mentioned this in the past. In the LA, when was the Olympics in LA? 84?
No.
Yeah? 84, the Olympics were in LA. And there was a Chabadnik, there was a women's convention in New York, and he went to speak at the women's convention that year. He spoke, the Olympics was a big thing in LA, and he spoke a whole thing about the Olympics, and he spoke a whole lesson he learned from the Olympics at this women's convention. Anyway, they print up a lot of times the speeches, so they printed up his speech about the Olympics and the thing from it, and all these things were sent into the Rebbe to be edited. Okay, the Rebbe's okay on it. In a second. So they wrote into the Rebbe to edit, and the Rebbe answered a very, very sharp answer. The Rebbe answered in Hebrew, but don't you know that the whole concept of the Olympics originated in idol worshipping? In the Greeks, it was the Greek gods. That's how the whole thing of the Olympics, huh? And the Rebbe said the whole thing out. Which was a good part, a good chunk of the speech was the Olympics. The Rebbe said the whole thing out. Anything about the Olympics. Anything that has to do with any type of it's included in the whole thing of images, and it's a very broad thing. But it depends, again, what type of sculptures they are. From this pasuk, it's just speaking sculptures for a god like the eagle, like the golden calf that they made. What?
Maybe on Sharon's throne, there's a lot of engraved animals or figures.
So that's what I'm saying. They weren't made for idol worshipping. They were made for Kedushin. They were made, you know, whatever, whether perfect or imperfect or whatever.
So they were made imperfectly?
Right. Either that or was it the way that it was made as animals, not the form of people. There's also a difference if you make a sculpture of an animal or a sculpture of a person. There's also a difference in halacha. So there was no sculpture of a person, Shlomo Melech's crown. It was the animals. Okay, now the pasuk says like this, and we'll soon see the connection between the different concepts over here. The pasuk says, "As Chagam Matzis Tishmer, you should observe the festival of Pesach." Now the Torah calls it Chagam Matzis. We learned before, why does the Torah call it Chagam Matzis, the Yom Tov of Matzah? It's interesting. Nowhere in Torah is a holiday called Pesach. We call it Pesach. But if you look in davening, we say, it's Chag HaMatzis is it. In Kiddush, we say Chag HaMatzis, the holiday of the Matzah. We call it Pesach. Torah calls it Chag HaMatzis. So it says, why is it we call the holiday Pesach, and Hashem calls the holiday Chag HaMatzis? So they say very beautiful, the Mefarshim explain a very beautiful interpretation. In simple English, it's Hashem loves us, and we love Him. Hashem calls it Chag HaMatzis. Why is Hashem calling it the holiday of Matzis? Because what did Matzis symbolize? That the Jews ran out of Egypt. They ran out so quick, the dough didn't even have a chance to rise. And they ran out into a desert, complete faith in God, not even knowing what they're going. They didn't even have food. I mean, they were such rushing out, it just didn't have a chance to rise. Hashem says, you know, this is the greatness of the Jew. They didn't question me, they didn't doubt me, they just ran out. So Hashem loves us so much, He calls the holiday on the name of our greatness, that we had matzis, and we didn't question God. We love Hashem. What do we call the holiday? We call the holiday Pesach. What does Pesach mean? That Hashem passed over, and He didn't kill the firstborn Jews, and He killed the firstborn Egyptians. So that's the love that we're showing Hashem. Look what Hashem did. He's so good, Hashem Pesached. You know, He jumped over the Jews' home. So therefore, the Mefarshim explained, Hashem calls the Yom Tov Chag HaMatzis, and we call the Yom Tov Pesach, because we're praising Hashem, and Hashem is praising us. So that's why we have the both things. Yeah, correct, great, great. Our tefillin, Hashem's tefillin. But before we even go, it says over here, just keep the holiday of matzis, okay? Shivas yom techa matzis, 7 days eat matzah. What's the connection over here between not making idols and all of a sudden Torah wakes up about keeping Pesach? I mean, we learned already you have to keep Pesach. What's the connection? So, it's interesting. The Daskin in Balatesis says very simple. When the Jews made the eagle, and this is the connection, right, of the whole story of the eagle, not to make foreign gods. When the Jews made the eagle, what did they say? Chag laHashem Mochar. We're going to party to God tomorrow. So they added a holiday. They added a holiday on their own. Hashem said, do me a favor, just keep the holidays I told you to keep. Don't make new idol-worshipping holidays over here. It's Chag HaMatzis means, like he says, Leisesev Eid Chag Milipcha. Don't make another holiday like you did by the eagle that you added a holiday. What I want you to do is, the ones I command you, that's what you do. And therefore, right after the pasuk of not making foreign gods, Hashem says, you should keep the Yom Tov HaMatzis. Another thing, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh explains another beautiful reason, what's the connection between matzah, Chag HaMatzis Pesach, and this concept of making the eagle. What does Pesach symbolize? No chametz. Chametz symbolizes evil. Chametz symbolizes haughtiness. It rises, it's blown up. That's the whole concept of idol worshipping, that we don't have nullification, we don't have bitul to Hashem. So because we don't have bitul to Hashem, what's the outcome of it? The outcome of it is you end up worshipping idols. So the Torah says, if you want to make sure not to worship idols, you know what you have to do? Spiritually, you have to keep the concept of matzahs, Chag HaMatzis, of the matzah, the concept of humility. And he says, Shivas yomim teichol matzis, 7 days you should eat matzah, kasher tzivisich, like I commanded you. When? L'meir chedesh ha'aviv, in the month of the spring. Why? Ki b'chedesh ha'aviv, because in the month of the spring, yatzasim mitzrayim, you went out of Egypt. Okay? Now, what Rashi says, what does it mean, Chedesh Aviv? Rashi says, Chedesh Habikur, meaning that's when the fruit becomes ripened in the fields. Becomes Mivaker, it starts ripening in the fields. Now, over here, you have a concept as follows. The Torah says clearly over here, it was mentioned earlier in Chumash also, but the Torah says, Pesach has to be in the spring. This is the whole source of why we have a leap year. This coming year, you know, after Rosh Hashanah, this coming year is going to be a leap year. We're going to have 2 months of Adar. Okay, two others. So Pesach will be a little bit later this coming year. Why do we have two others? What's this whole concept of a leap year? The leap year is as follows. The Torah says over here, Pesach has to be in the spring. Chodesh Aviv, it has to be in the spring. Now, if you have a lunar calendar, and this is, interestingly, the Muslims, Lahavdil, also go by the lunar calendar, but they don't have the leap years like we do. Now, the solar calendar, that the Goyish calendar, is 365 days. The lunar calendar that we go by is 354 days a year. So there's 11 days missing per year from the lunar to the solar. Okay? Now, after, let's say, 10 years, you are missing 110 days. Okay? So if you keep losing 11 days a year, Pesach is going to be in the middle of a snowstorm. Because you're losing like 3 months. Pesach is going to be 3 months earlier. So in California, we don't have the problem. But in other places, you're going to have Pesach in the middle of the winter. Right? Because you're losing every year 11 days. And the Torah says Pesach has to be in the spring. Because of that, how do we rectify the problem? So we add every so often what's called a leap year. A leap year means we add an extra month in the calendar. So Pesach always falls out later. So then, another month is another 30 days. So like this, you're losing 11 days a year. So then eventually you make it up. So the way the Chachamim set up the calendar that we have today, it runs in a 19-year cycle. The calendar we have today is a 19-year cycle. From the 19-year cycle of the Hebrew calendar, 12 of the years are regular years, 7 are leap years. Okay? So when you have, in a 19-year cycle, 7 leap years, and 12 regular years, at the end of 19 years, it always equals itself out. You're missing a day or two, that's why sometimes Kislev has 30, 29, Cheshvan, it works itself out. But that's why that's the reason why we have a Jewish leap year, because Pesach has to fall out in the spring. And if you don't, it's going to be in the winter. That's why the Lahavdil the Goyim, the Muslims that don't have, they have the lunar calendar, but they don't have a leap year. That's why Ramadan, sometimes it's in the summer, sometimes in the winter, sometimes in the spring, sometimes in the fall. But Torah says Pesach has to be B'chedesh Aviv. It has to be in the spring. And
how do you figure the seven loop years?
Which years?
Yes.
No, there's exact years. Which ones of the years? I remember. The Rambam says in Kiddush, the Rambam says exactly which one of the 19 are leap years.
I remember the last 10 years we had one time.
No, 3 years ago was a leap year.
No, that's the solar calendar you're talking about.
No, you're talking about the leap year in the solar calendar.
Right.
No.
That's every 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Because the solar calendar is 365 and a quarter days. Mm-hmm. So you can't make a quarter of a new year. So every 4 years they add another day, February 28th. They make it February 29th. But in the Jewish calendar, Adar is the last month, because Nisan is the beginning of the month. And in fact, nowadays we have it set up on the calendar, exactly when the leap, we can tell you in the next 1,000 years when the leap year is going to be. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when they didn't use calendars, Beis Din would have to sit down and figure out, and taking many, many things into consideration, to figure out when they make a leap year, and why they make a leap year, and so on and so forth. To give you an extent of how far it goes, a Kohen Gadol was not allowed to be in the reckoning of to make a leap year or not. Why? Why is a Kohen Gadol not allowed to be in the reckoning? Because he would be, what's called in Hebrew, Nogea Bedover. He would be affected by the outcome. Why? The Kohen Gadol had to go 5 times to the mikveh in Yom Kippur. Now, if Yom Kippur falls out later, it's colder. It's closer to the winter. If it's earlier, it's closer to the summer. Right? So Kohen Gadol would do everything not to make a leap year. Because if it's a leap year, then Yom Kippur is also later. Right? Everything is... And then he would have to go into a colder mikveh. So Chacham said, you know what? No Kohen Gadol in the thing. He was a great man, but he couldn't be involved in the figuring out of when they make an extra... But the source of it is because the Torah says it has to be B'chedesh Aviv. It has to be in the month of the spring. And the Torah says, because in the month of spring I took you out of Egypt. Now, what's the advantage of taking of Hashem take... Why is the Torah emphasizing that he took us out of Egypt in the springtime? So the Medrash explains that Hashem says, I took you out in a beautiful season. Not too hot, not too cold. Right? Hashem said, I took you out in the springtime. You couldn't get better weather than the spring. Hashem said, look how kind I am to you. I took you out in the spring. And in fact, there's an interesting question. Why do we celebrate Sukkot in Tishrei? It says when Hashem took it says in the Pasuk, Ki basukis ishafti is b'nei Yisrael. I put the Jews into Sukkot when I took them out of Egypt. Right? So the question is, then we should sit in the Sukkot on Pesach. Or right after Pesach, we should have, why do we push off Sukkot a half a year after Yom Kippur, then we celebrate Sukkot, why don't we celebrate it later, Pesach time? So the answer is, because Pesach time, everybody goes out into the huts, the summer cottages. So if you'd go and sit in the Sukkot on Pesach, nobody would see you doing it for the mitzvah. Everybody thinks you're going to the country. But in Tishrei, after Yom Kippur, it's already getting cold. Everybody's coming back from the country. Then the Jews go out and sit in the sukkah. So then it shows that you're doing it for the mitzvah rather than just for the enjoyment. Okay, so Hashem says, B'chedesh Aviv, in the spring, I took you out of Mitzrayim, and therefore you have to keep Pesach, you have to keep the Yom Tov of Pesach, and so on and so forth. Another thing, the Mefarshim explain, why does it say here, what's the connection between Pesach and the eagle? So we learned already, number one, because they made a new holiday, or as the Rechaim explains, oh, we didn't finish the Rechaim, by the way. The Rechaim explains, what's the connection between matzah and the eagle? Because matzah is the concept of not eating chametz. Chametz is the source of all evil. So therefore, the Torah says, if you want to not make idols, then you have to be very careful to keep Pesach. But there's another reason for this also. When the Jews made the golden calf, what did they say after the calf was done? Eila lekecha Yisrael, this is your God, Jews, who took you out of Egypt. They said, this egel, the pasuk says, took you out of Egypt. So Hashem telling the Jews, now that I'm warning you not to make an egel, Hashem is telling the Jews, now remember, keep Pesach because I took you out of Egypt, not the egel took you out of Egypt. So therefore, God is telling them now, you should know, ki b'chedesh aviv, etziach, I took you out in the time of Pesach, not the idol.
Who said that? The
Arabs
told the Jews that?
Yeah. Yeah, if you look before in the Pasuk, it says, they said, Eila lekecha Yisrael, this is your God, Jews, who took you out of Egypt. So Hashem is saying, now I want you to remember that I was the one that took you, not them. Okay, another thing, the Gemara learns out, what's the connection between Pesach and idol worshipping? That the Torah puts to do together. It says, whoever, the Gemara has a very sharp expression about working a Chol HaMoed. The Gemara says, whoever shames the holidays is like worshipping idols. That means you don't treat Chol HaMoed with proper respect, that it's more Yom Tov than Chol, so it's like you're worshipping idols. Where do we learn this out from? From the connection between the two. The Torah says, don't make foreign gods, and then the Torah says, keep Pesach for 7 days. Meaning even the Chol HaMoed, even not the intermediate dairies, also have to be kept properly, that a Jew shouldn't be considered worshipping idols.
You cannot work on Chol HaMoed?
It's better not to. There's certain lenient, officially no. Are there leniencies to work? Yes. But it's a leniency to work that really is, you're not supposed to work. Because it's really a holiday. Okay, now the Torah continues. Next page. Hey, by the way, we got the 512. Marty. we reached 512 already.
Fantastic.
Okay. Okay, it says like this. Kopeter echemli, all firstborn to the womb is mine. V'chol miknecha tizachar, as well as any of your livestock that produce a male. Shpeter sher v'sed, the first firstborn of animals are also mine. This is the mitzvah of firstborn people and firstborn animals. Now, we know that Din is a firstborn son, who is, and as the Torah says, interesting, Peter Rechem. The Torah says clearly, though, it has to be from the womb. Which means if a child is born cesarean, so then they're not Peter Rechem, they are not a firstborn, halachically, as far as redeeming the firstborn. They're firstborn for inheritance. You know, that the firstborn gets double. But as far as the mitzvah of redeeming the firstborn, that doesn't apply if it's a, number one, a woman, a female, or if it's not a natural birth. Because the Torah says clearly, the Torah doesn't say, all firstborn are mine. The Torah says, Paterechemli, the firstborn of the womb is mine. Therefore, it says even, there's an interesting halach. What happens if the first baby was, a first boy was born cesarean, and the second one was born natural? So the second one is really the firstborn of the womb. But the problem is, he's not a firstborn. In other words, the Torah says you need both things. You need to be a firstborn, and it has to be from Peter Rechem, from the womb. So if the first one's cesarean, it's not from the womb. The second one was born natural, he's the first of the womb, but he's not the firstborn. And therefore, by the way, this is another interesting halacha. This only applies to the women, not to the men. Meaning, what happens if a man was married in the time when polygamy was allowed? A man had two wives, and each one gave birth first to a son. He would have to do a pinyan aben for son A and for son B, even though it's not his firstborn anymore. But it's the first one from the mother's womb, so therefore it would still have a din, a halachic obligation of the firstborn, that you have to redeem for five... what?
Why didn't the Beis Mikdash have to be
better? For what?
When the time Mashiach, when the
B'chayrim? No, they still had it in the B'chayrim. I can't, that's really wrong for me to say. I don't know. I don't know what would be in the Beis HaMikdash if it had to be, because Halacha doesn't discuss them. Because after Matan Torah, they were, the Kohanim did it. I don't know if a Kohen... No, the Kohen, the question is, a Kohen was replacing the firstborns, so... And when Mashiach comes, we're going to go back to the firstborns working in the Beis HaMikdash. So what does it mean, a firstborn natural born or even cesarean born?
Do we also still do the, and for the animals too, still today?
Yeah, not in Israel. They do something else. In Israel, technically, there's a din of b'chor, firstborn animals, even today. So technically, a firstborn animal, you have to bring as a carbon into the Beis HaMikdash. If it's a firstborn donkey, we'll see soon what the din is. But if you have a firstborn kosher animal, it's holy from birth. As soon as it's born, it's holy. So in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they have to bring it as a korban. And as we say in davening, HaBchor Nechal HaKohanim. It was eaten, the shechted as a korban, as a sacrifice, and then the Kohanim ate it. Now that there's no Beis HaMikdash, it still retains its sanctity. So what the din is, what do you have to do? You have to let it graze until it gets a blemish. Meaning if it gets a blemish that would disqualify it as a korban, then it loses its status.
And then the shechted,
what they do, what they're not allowed to do, is they'll put it into a little pen full of barbed wire that the animal should get hurt, because otherwise you can't do anything. It's wrong, I'm saying that, but this is what sometimes what they do. What they also do, and this is a very, very debatable halachic issue, and I don't know if they do it anymore in Israel, but there was a leniency that some people you did was, before the animal was about to give birth to the firstborn calf, they sold it to a non-Jew, like you sell chametz, and then the animal was born in the possession of the non-Jew. So the non-Jew is not obligated in the mitzvah, right? This is only... If you buy a firstborn animal, it's not from a guy, it's not holy. Only if it's your animal that gave birth to a firstborn. So what they would do is, many times, it's a very, very questionable issue if you're allowed to do it on halacha. In fact, the Alter Rebbe talks about it also, you're not supposed to do it. But there's a leniency of selling it to the guy, then the guy owns the animal gives birth, and then you buy it back.
Rabbi, did you say that when Moshiach comes, the first form will be serving in Beit HaMikdash?
That's what it says in certain places, yeah.
Oh, that's a debatable thing?
We'll see. These things, when Moshiach comes, we'll know exactly what's going to be. No, I'm serious. Until Moshiach comes, we're not going to know exactly what's going on. We have to wait until he comes.
Nowadays,
this,
the firstborn animal is
Midrash? Because the Torah doesn't bind the Torah to Israel. No, the question is biblical, rabbinic. Okay, now, by the way, there's another interesting difference between... Okay, so let's get what the din straight first. Firstborn son needs to be redeemed by the Kohen. Okay? You come to the Kohen, as everybody knows, it's called the Pinyan Aben. You come to the Kohen, you say, hey, my wife just gave birth to a firstborn son. The Kohen says, what do you want? The boy or the money you have to give me? So people say, well, I got to think about it. By the way, it says even if you want to give it to the Kohen, you're not allowed to. Whatever the parent says, you know what, keep him. I don't want the kid, you keep him. You're not allowed to do it. You have to redeem it. But the din is, it's done on the 31st day. When you redeem a firstborn child, it has to be done on the 31st day, not before. Why? Because we learned that a child doesn't have an established chayis. They're not established life yet until they're 30 days old. That's when established what's called a chazakah, that they're alive, they're going to remain alive is after 30 days. Therefore, there's a lot of halachic differences. God forbid, if somebody murders a kid under 30 days old, you can't kill them because you didn't know if the kid was going to make it after 30 days and so on. But the din is, on the 31st day, after the kid lived 30 days, then we know the kid's going to live. Then the kohen has a right to come and say, okay, it's my mitzvah. An interesting thing, 1 second. By the way, there's an interesting halacha that a lot of people aren't aware of. Every day after the 31st day that you don't do a pinyan aben, you are transgressing a positive mitzvah. The Torah says redeem him on the 30th day, right? Every day after that you don't, you get every day you get transgress a positive mitzvah. What happens if a kid, the father didn't redeem the son? So he was totally non-religious, he didn't know about it or whatever. So then the din is, when the kid becomes bar mitzvah, they have to do it themselves. They have their own obligation to redeem the firstborn. They have to redeem themselves, in other words. Obviously, don't bring in the kid and say, my wife gave birth. The person comes along to the car and says, I'm a firstborn, I was never redeemed, I need to redeem myself, and here's the money.
Would you do it on Shabbos if that's the 31st day?
No. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to do it. So Torah doesn't let you do it on Shabbos. So then you have to do it on the next day. But for instance, there's another interesting din while we're on the topic. A kid that was born on Shabbos, natural birth, then the bris is done on Shabbos on the 8th day, if the kid's healthy. If a kid was born cesarean on Shabbos, you do not do the bris on Shabbos. You have to push it off to Sunday. You're not allowed to do the bris on Shabbos. It's only, they learn it out from Pesukim, it's only if it's a natural birth. Nobody was born on the east side, so it doesn't matter. So you have to be born naturally to be able to have a bris on Shabbos. Or if a bris is delayed on Shabbos, you know, the delayed bris you also don't do on Shabbos. Yeah? I'm waiting.
Rabbi, my father-in-law, Shaul, he was a Kohen. And my wife, therefore, was a Bas Kohana, right?
Right.
She had a sister born before her, and a brother born after her. But I remember anything, like you're reading from the Chumash, that involved my in-laws and their whole family. And then, I have a Kohen's daughter, and my son was born first. Nothing.
I know, let me finish. Point well taken. The din is, a person who's a Kohen or a Levi don't have to redeem their kids. Okay? Not only that, if the wife who gave birth is a daughter of a Kohen or a Levi, they also don't do a pinyan aben on their kid. That means even if Yisrael marries the daughter of a Levi or the daughter of a Kohen, and they have a firstborn son, right? So then they also don't have to do it. They're freed from Pinyan Aben.
How much do we have to give them?
It's 5 shkolim in weight. It's a whole lot. But the practical halacha, it's 101 grams of silver.
In total? Or each shekel?
No. Total.
It's like 4.5 ounces.
It's like 4.5 ounces, but the question is the size of the coins. Now, some coin, if they're an ounce each, so then you give, we're not going to give 4.5 coins, obviously, you have to give 5 coins. But in certain areas, they realize that the coins are a little bit less than an ounce, so they give 6 coins.
Dollar-wise, how much is it?
It depends on the price of silver. If silver is like $6 an ounce, and you need 5 ounces, it's $30. It's not that expensive. Depends on the size of silver. But you need 101 grams of silver. Or you can give the value of 101 grams of silver. What happens if you don't have coins?
If you actually give it, he keeps it.
Well, technically, if you give it to the coin, he keeps it. I mean, you know, that's part of the...
Oh, it's, I thought maybe it's like selling it as animals to the coins.
He does it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a rich man from that.
Side
line,
huh?
Yeah. Sideline.
I
don't quit your day job yet. Okay. So that's the mitzvah Pinyan Aben, what's called Pinyan Aben. Then the Torah says in the same passage, any male that will give for a shor or seh, so then you have to also redeem it. Okay? But it's only again if it's male, not females. Now the Torah says a very strange law. If it's a firstborn donkey, you have to redeem it for a sheep. And if you don't, right after you have to chop off the neck of the donkey. Now, and this is basically officially it's exeris hakasuv. There's illogical reason for it. There's no reason for it, and the Torah says like this: the firstborn donkey and only the donkey, by the way, is you have to redeem. It's the only treifa animal that has a firstborn that you have to redeem. Physically, if you have a firstborn pig, a firstborn camel, a firstborn kangaroo, or I know kangaroo is kosher. No. Then you don't have to do pinyin, but by the din is like this: if it's a firstborn donkey, you redeem the firstborn for a sheep, and the sheep becomes the firstborn that you give to the kohen. What happens if somebody says, "I don't want to do it"? You have to take and chop off the back of the neck of the donkey.
You kill him.
You kill the donkey. Yeah.
Why do we have to say this prayer every day, Rabbi, in Kaddish Leaf? They say every morning.
Well, we not this pasuk, but the concept is mentioned there. That's because of tefillin. The main thing over there is tefillin, so that we say the other psukim also. Okay, so therefore it says like this. What's the reason for this mitzvah? The mitzvah is very simple. When Hashem killed the firstborn Egyptians, Hashem said, I'm taking in exchange the firstborn Jews. Okay, I killed the firstborn Egyptians, therefore the firstborn Jews are in my service. So either after, now the Kohen represents God in the world. So Hashem says, the firstborn kids are mine, so if you want, you can redeem it from me. How do you redeem it from me? By giving the Kohen the money. It's one of the 24 gifts that the Kohenim were given in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. But this is a din that applies today also. Pinyan Aben that you have to do. But it's not very common today for a very simple reason. Number one, like we said, if the guy's a Kohen or a Levi, there's no Pinyan Aben. If the wife is a Kohen or a Levi, the daughter of a Kohen or a Levi, it doesn't apply. If there's a firstborn girl, again, it doesn't apply. If it wasn't natural birth cesarean, again, it doesn't apply. So, you know, to have a firstborn that both parents are not Yisraelim or Kohanim, and a boy in natural is not, I mean, it's common, but it's not that common.
And not that many Jews have donkeys either.
Well, no, we're not talking about donkeys, we're talking about firstborn sons. Why? In the time of the Gemara, everybody had donkeys. But today, yeah. Chad.
Today I have no Lexus.
Today different. Maybe they should give the firstborn Bentleys and Porsches and Ferraris and Lexus.
Rabbi,
mentioned you have to redeem the firstborn donkey too? Only donkey or other?
Only donkey. It's exeris at cost of only donkey.
Is that a different kind of mitzvah than a folk?
No, the actual concept of firstborn is logical. Hashem said, listen,
what
were the words, especially by that the fact it's only by a donkey. That's illogical.
But it's not a chok,
though. It's not logical, so it's a chok.
But is it a fourth type of mitzvah? That's my question. Besides the chok,
No, it's considered a chayk. It's considered a chayk. Because it's totally logical.
You don't have a rabbi, you do it 31st of the day. And now you do bar mitzvah, right?
No, every day you have to do it.
What if the guy is 20, 25 years old?
And he didn't do it? He has to do it. First possible chance. Every day he's transgressing a positive commandment.
Then he still get the same amount, or do you have to charge him extra money?
No interest. No, sorry.
You cannot take interest on Jews.
Trying to make sure
make him some money. No. No, it's an obligation that they have to do.
If somebody's not sure
if the parents did a redemption or not, Halacha says they have to do a redemption without a bracha. There's a whole bracha you say. In fact, you say Shechionu also. But the din is, because you don't want to say God's name in vain, because if it's a doubt, so you do the redemption without it.
Rabbi,
I'll give you another example. What happened? One second. What happens if somebody's a firstborn, the father's not Jewish? So who has to do the pinyan aben? The obligation is on the community to do it. Or Bezdin, you know, meaning the community has
Rabbi,
the obligation.
I was the firstborn, and my parents didn't do any redemption when I was born. How come?
One minute. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember we danced, we drank wine.
I have a better idea. We'll sell you to the highest bidder. We'll redeem you to the highest bidder. It doesn't have to be a kohen.
And I'm still a Jew.
Okay. Kol b'chor b'necha, okay, pasuk 20, chav. Betach amar tifta b'sed, the firstborn donkey have to redeem for a sheep. Im lay sifta, if you don't redeem a varafti, you have to chop off the back of his neck. Kol b'chor b'necha tifta, you have to redeem all the firstborn sons. Okay, and Rashi says, it means 5 silver coins and it has to be a month old. V'le yiro panei reikam, and you shouldn't see my face empty handed. Meaning, simply, Rashi says, it means as follows, that a person, when they come up to the... Because it's a very funny pasuk. It says over here, redeem your firstborn, don't see my face empty-handed. The pasuk is in the wrong place. When it says, keep Pesach, it should say, don't come to the Beis HaMikdash empty-handed. It's like, the Torah talks about firstborn, and then all of a sudden the Torah says back, don't see me empty-handed. So Rashi says, the simple meaning is that it's a new thing. Okay, it's like a new pasuk. Don't come to the Beis HaMikdash empty-handed. Meant, this is the source, that when Jews came up 3 times a year to the Beis HaMikdash for Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, they had an obligation to bring sacrifices. They were not allowed to come empty-handed. Okay, that's from these psukim. This pasuk is mentioned before in Chumash, but this is basically the source. Another interpretation is that from here we learn out a new law. It means like this. There's a din, in English is called severance pay. If somebody had an Eved Ivri, a Jewish slave, when he finished working, you have to give him severance pay, the Torah says. Hanik tanik lay, you have to give him severance pay. That was a din by an Eved. So the Gemara says, what is considered severance pay for an Eved? And the Torah says, you have to give him from your oil and from your wheat and from your wine. And the Torah says, from everything you have. So the Gemara learned out, how much do you have to give? You have to give 5 silver dollars from everything that you have. And the fact that this pasuk is said where it is, okay, it's empty or open. We just learned this the concept in the Gemara. If it's an open, gzeda shava, meaning we learn out A from B, but there's an extra pasuk, so we learn out one din from the next. From this extra pasuk, the Torah learns out that if you redeem, when you give severance pay to an Eved, you have to give him this amount of redemption of the firstborn, 5 shkolim worth, to have everything that you have. That's severance pay.
Total of five
shkol. No, five shkol, Mashi says, mikol minu min, from each one.
How do you determine how many there are?
Yeah.
No, if you have wine, oil, wheat, wine. Whatever it is, yeah.
Specified wine.
Yes. Don't go over. From your cattle, from different things they have to give them from.
How many
different things? Right. Today there's... Sell the worker to the guy before you fire him. But this is also the concept that's interesting. What's the halach of severance pay today? If you fire a worker, do you have to give him severance pay or not?
I don't think so.
So there's a whole question, halach, about severance pay. In Chabad is a custom that the Rebbe instituted that if you fire somebody, you have to give him well, it depends. It can't say all under all circumstances, but officially, it's a month per year.
A what?
A month per year. If a guy works for you, let's say 10 years, go about in a moised not in business. If a guy worked in a Jewish institution for you, like a school or a shul like that, whatever, so they accepted tradition not only Chabad in many places, but the Rebbe wanted in Chabad also that it should be 1 month per year. So if you worked, let's say, 10 years for a guy and then he fired you, you have to give him 10 months pay.
Right up front or 10 months?
No, you can work at that pay. Then the question is, does that include medical insurance? Doesn't include medical insurance? Does that include car expenses? Doesn't include, does it cause for rentals? You know, that you add, let's say, stipend for rentals and all that? I mean, that's all the dentists are about these things.
Doesn't apply to business?
No. Not unless if there's a custom. In other words, severance.
You get four-fifths of
yeah, but it depends why they fired the person. There's so many dinim involved. Because if the guy quit, then he doesn't have it.
Even if they get unemployment?
So if the boss makes his life so miserable that he quits, the boss gets out of pay and give him severance pay.
Rabbi.
Which a lot of people do, by the way.
What? I want everybody to know.
Thank you.
That I know in Major League Baseball.
This is a new one.
Professional basketball, in professional football,
Marty.
When a man gets fired, he's fired. He gets no back pay.
Good.
He can't sue. A court won't hold him up. The judge won't vote for him. They make enough money as it is.
Right.
Incredible amount of money.
Thank you.
And,
Marty, that's it. So the Vidal Panayreikam, don't see my face empty-handed, means you cannot come. You have to come when the Jews come to the Beis Hamikdash, they have to bring a carbon. Okay? Okay. By the way, there's another thing the Baal HaTurim said before. What's the connection between Pesach and idols? Okay, there's buzzing about not making idols, then it says about Pesach. So the Baal HaTurim adds one more concept to it. Just like Chametz and Pesach is forbidden to benefit from, you cannot benefit from idols either. That's again the connection between the idols and the Pesach. Okay, now the Torah says like this. Sheish yomim taved, 6 days you should work. V'yem ashvi tishbeis, on the seventh day you have to rest. Okay, this is again the concept of Shabbos. You can work for 6 days, you have to rest on the seventh. You have to stop working from plowing and harvesting.
Plowing what?
Harvesting. Plowing and harvesting. Okay. Now, simply, the question is, Shabbos, there's 39 malachas. Why does the Torah mention only these two? Okay, it should say either 39 or none. I mean, the Torah picks out 39. So if you see here in the English, it brings down from the Ramban, because one is essential, one is a time, like, one's essential to one's livelihood. If it's the time for one or the next, you can't waste time. So the Torah says, even though it's a source of livelihood, parnasa, and you must work in the field at that time, if not, you could ruin it. Nevertheless, the Torah says Shabbos as precedence over even making a living. That's what the Ramban says. But another thing, the Chacham Rashi says it over here. What does the Chachamim learn from the fact that the Torah says only plowing and harvesting? It teaches us not only about Shabbos, but it teaches us about the sabbatical year. that you're not allowed to plow, like Rashi says, before the sabbatical year, and you can't harvest after the sabbatical year. You know, the Torah is adding this concept of not plowing and not harvesting, not only for Shabbos itself, you're not allowed to do it, but the Torah is teaching us another din. In fact, this coming year is a sabbatical year in Israel. So in Israel, it would be forbidden to plow, not only when Rosh Hashanah comes, which is the beginning of the sabbatical year, even before that, you wouldn't allow to plow. Not only that, when the Shemitah year is over, you're not allowed to harvest the things that grew in the Shemitah year for a certain period of time. And therefore, the Torah is not only speaking about the 6 days of the week, the Torah is speaking about the 6 days of the sabbatical year. In other words, like this, there is the weekly Shabbos, there is the monthly Shabbos, and there's the yearly Shabbos. And then there's even more than that, but as we'll soon see. The weekly Shabbos is like, well, you work 6 days, rest on the seventh. Okay? The yearly Shabbos...
Monthly.
That's the week. The monthly Shabbos is Tishrei. The month of Tishrei is the seventh month. Right? Chodesh HaShvi. So that month, in the yearly sabbatical, seven, is the month of Tishrei, which is a very special month. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Simchat Torah, all these types of things. Then you have, in years, the seventh year, which is the sabbatical year. Then you have Shemitah. Then you have seven Shemitahs. Then you have a Yovel, the Jubilee year. So you have a lot of these concepts of, in fact, it says in the Medrash, that between the first temple and the second temple were 70 years of Golus. That was a punishment for Shemitahs that they didn't keep. Because they didn't keep the sabbatical year, Hashem punished, it says one explanation is, Hashem punished them for 70 years. That they didn't have the Beis Hamikdash for 70 years. 70 is the concept of seven. So it's the concept of they didn't keep the laws of Shemitah properly. So all these things are interconnected. The Torah interconnects, by the way, 7 days of week, 7 months, 7 years, seven times 7 years, 70 years, all these things. You see even in 7 days of creation, right, correspond with the 7,000 years of creation. So you have even in the concept of sabbatical in the 7,000 years. You have 6 years that we work, seventh year is the era of Mashiach. So you have it, you know, in all aspects of time. You have it in daily to a certain extent, but weekly, monthly, yearly, and lifetime is 70 years. It's also 10 times the 7 Shemitah. It's all connected to this concept of... So therefore, we learn out a lot of dinim from Shabbos. In fact, the Gemara asks an interesting question. Maybe you don't have to keep Shabbos during the sabbatical year. If the whole year is Shabbos, maybe you don't have to keep Shabbos. So it shouldn't be ending the whole year of Shabbos. So we learn out, even when the Torah speaks about Shemitah, the Torah says you still have to keep Shabbos. And therefore, even though it's a sabbatical year completely, you still have to keep Shabbos, you can't do any work. But there's a lot of connections between the sabbatical, like we said, of 6 days of the week and Shabbos, and the Shemitah, and so on and so forth. And basically creation. But, I mean, there's a lot to talk about Shemitah. Here's not really the source of all the dinim of Shemitah. It's later on in Chumash. When we get there, we're going to talk much more about the laws of Shemitah. The main thing it says like this. You should not see my face empty-handed. Okay, 6 days. You work 7 days. You have to rest. And then it says, Chag Shavuos Tasa Lecha. You should make the holiday of Shavuos Bikurik Sichitim, which is the festival of the offering of the wheat harvest, the Chag HaOsif, and the time of gathering, which is Tkufas HaShanah, when the changing of the year. I'm going to leave this for next week because it's interesting. We're going to learn why all the three holidays, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, are all connected to agriculture, right? And Lechera, what's the connection between agriculture and the Yom Tov? Yom Tov was the Yom Tov have to do with the ground. There's an interesting explanation. We'll see you next time.